that's Duke Ellington, Charlie Mingus, and Max Roach, flexing their post-bop avant-garde jazz muscles with Money Jungle, is a title track of their collaborative 1962 album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we add yet another chapter to the Clinton Money Jungle today. 7 years into the counteroffensive against a campaign of terror that claimed the lives of 15,000 people and caused the displacement of about 2 million more in Nigeria and neighboring Chad, Niger, and Cameroon, Nigeria's army declared just four days ago, that it had freed more than 5,000 people held hostage by the terrorist group Boko Haram in raids on 15 villages. The militant Islamic group, claiming affiliation with ISIS, riled the country and most of the world 2 years ago when it kidnapped 276 schoolgirls from the town of Chibok in Borno State. The search continues for them. Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State when Boko Haram emerged as Africa's ISIS affiliate, repeatedly refused to designate the militants as terrorists, even at congressional urging and pleas from African leaders, including the Nigerian president, for support in combating terrorism. Meanwhile, we got to know that Boko Haram escalated its terror campaign and atrocities, which continue. Our guest today is Mindy Bells. She is a senior editor of World Magazine, and she has written half of a two-part series in World Magazine concerning the troubling ties to Nigerian big money, the role of the Clinton Foundation, and former President Bill Clinton, and specifically Hillary Clinton, and their connection to Hillary Clinton's inaction on Boko Haram. So it is the contention in your article, Mindy, and I read it with great interest, this piece that you did in World Magazine was very, very troubling indeed. It is, in fact, titled Troubling Ties. Could we begin by talking about this premise that while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, and despite repeated pleas for her department and the Obama administration to seriously regard the emergence of Boko Haram as a terrorist group inflicting this much damage on the continent of Africa. In fact, it has done more damage even as a newly minted terrorist group than perhaps any other group in recent history, that there was this not just reluctance but adamance that this was not going to happen. First of all, welcome to Lead Stories. I'm so grateful that you're with us today. And again, I was mesmerized by the two-piece article, the two-part article, articles that you did and that the bureau chief also did, bureau chief of World Magazine, in trying to bring to light, this is J.C. Derrick, trying to bring to light this aspect, the Nigerian aspect, of many unanswered questions about Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, and the Clinton Foundation. Just yesterday, we spoke again with Charles Ortel, who added yet another dimension to the questions that simply are not being asked, except by people like you and me and Charles and others. But they seem not to matter much to mainstream media. But let's start with good manners. Let's welcome you officially again. And let's start with that question. Why do you think Hillary Clinton, why do you say that Hillary Clinton was at best reluctant and worse, adamant about not categorizing Boko Haram as a terrorist group, not placing it on the list of terrorist organizations which would have kicked into action a number of supportive measures that could have been taken on the part of the U.S. to help fight Boko Haram in Nigeria?
Thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here and talk about this. I think that what we tried to do was we tried to connect some very strange dots. One that you've highlighted is this just explosive rise of Boko Haram, which happened literally on Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's watch. And then at the same time, you know, as someone said to us, you know, Hillary Clinton on these sorts of things when it comes to fighting terrorism, she's taken issues since she left office with some of President Obama's stances. She's known as something of a centrist and a hawk when it comes to terror fighting. And yet for 2 years, while a number of former ambassadors to Africa, a number of people in the diplomatic community, people at the CIA, people at the Pentagon were saying we must designate this group a foreign terrorist organization so that we can start putting in place sanctions against specific principals in the organization, putting surveillance in place, those kinds of things that the United States just normally does against a group like this. Hillary Clinton dragged her feet. It just doesn't make sense. Why would she not do that? And it seems to us that it's worth asking these questions even now, not only because of the presidential campaign, but because of this incredible number of casualties that you highlight. Boko Haram in 2015 killed 10,000 people in Nigeria and in the region. It's far beyond what we know has happened under Islamic State in the Middle East.
Well, let's pursue this a little further here. It is therefore not out of bounds to say that Hillary Clinton's so-called dragging of her feet basically aided and abetted terrorism in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm. I think that's reasonable to say.
What could the reason have been? What did you uncover as possible explanations for this by the people that you have talked to?
Mm-hmm. Well, keep in mind, too, that Americans were at risk. I mean, that's one of the key findings here, is that a terrorist group actually be a foreign terrorist organization. They'd be up targeting internationals and launching attacks across borders. Boko Haram was doing all of those things. One of the things that seemed very strange to us in August 2011, when Boko Haram bombed the UN compound in the capital of Abuja, Nigeria's capital, we just discovered through talking to a number of sources that there was an American actually inside the compound at the time that happened. There was a number of internationals there. A Swede was killed and some others. So right away, you have what you would normally expect to be elevated threat, elevated attention to this. And yet, if you go back and look at the record, no mention really of the American, no mention at all of the American present in the building. No real attention to the attack given in the State Department briefings, and it's almost as if they were attempting to act as though it didn't happen. And what you see across the same period, this is 2011 leading up to the 2012 election campaign, what you see across the same time period is that both Hillary, or I should say the Clinton Foundation, which features both Bill and Hillary Clinton as officers and members of the board, was raising a lot of money from Nigerians, very prominent Nigerians, and Nigerians with a very checkered past. And I think what we're trying to do here is simply say, why would the Clintons risk their reputation? Why would they engage in operations in Nigeria with people who have these checkered pasts, Nigerian millionaires and billionaires who have been implicated in all kinds of wrongdoing and corruption, why would they be involved with those sorts of people in the public way that they have been? Why would they risk their reputation? And at the same time, why would she, as a prominent public official, not be taking the normal steps to combat terrorism? It just simply doesn't add up. And it appears that what was happening was some kind of effort to listen to these crony business people in Nigeria instead of pursuing a normal U.S. policy.
Well, we'll get to some of the key players that you've identified in your article, but I want to stick with this issue of registering and the unwillingness, or certainly the refusal to register with the Obama administration for whom she worked as Secretary of State, Boko Haram, that by that time had begun to concern the international community for the sheer number of casualties it had inflicted in such a short time. Why the refusal to get the United States to respond to it as a foreign terrorist organization? What would have been, what are some of the requisites when the U.S. government regards an organization as a foreign terrorist organization and classifies it as such? What happens?
Well, there are a couple of things to keep. For one thing, I mean, just if we go back to this 2011 bombing, having Boko Haram listed as an FTO or foreign terrorist organization, that would have created a response from both the FBI, the Treasury Department, the Justice Department. There was a 5-person FBI team that came in to assist the Nigerian investigation of that bombing. But because the American in the building was never listed and Boko Haram was not designated as an FTO, she wasn't eligible for benefits that people would normally, under the terrorist incident designation list, anyone who is a victim of terrorism under U.S. law is entitled to paid trauma counseling and things like that. Keep in mind, she had been a government employee. None of those things happened. She's not listed. You can look at the listing on the internet. All of the related incidents that Americans are allowed to receive benefits, that wouldn't have happened in this case. And in subsequent cases, we also cover this massive bombing in the city of Kano that took place in 2012. I was actually there shortly after that. The city was on lockdown. You had very public threats against Americans and Europeans in northern Nigeria. No response on the part of the United, no formal response on the part of the United States that would allow for American citizens working in this area to be protected, that would allow for the normal things that would happen. It wouldn't necessarily mean immediate American military involvement or those kinds of things. It would simply mean that sale of helicopters, for instance, could go through that would allow the Nigerian military to begin to canvass these areas and track Boko Haram. The State Department under Hillary Clinton actually blocked sale of helicopters to Nigeria. Normal forms of surveillance through the Treasury Department and through the CIA and our intelligence agencies that would have allowed us to begin to track these people and find out where they were. You know, you could argue that if we had been tracking them, we might have prevented something like the kidnapping of over 300 schoolgirls from the school in Chibok. And then tracking them down, it's just been really strange that in all of this time, there has not been more success in combating a terror group like this operating in this kind of territory.
This 2011 bombing that you referred to was devastating. You had, at that compound, you had more than 400 UN staff members working. And one, the survivor, one of the American survivors that you referred to was Vernice Guthrie, who happens to be African-American, an attorney who represented the American Bar Association in Nigeria. And she was working at the time with the UN Development Program. So for a person who claims to be so much for human rights and women's rights and against terrorism, this does present a very different picture from the Hillary Clinton she would like the public to know and to regard her as a champion of democracy and so forth. Members of Congress had also chimed in here. To their credit, they urged Hillary Clinton to designate Boko Haram to, as a terrorist organization in order to kickstart those things that you had just iterated about the that would then put into effect the ability or to the assistance to the Nigerian government to begin to put this group under greater surveillance and to encourage some kind of kind of a cooperative effort, not only with the United States but outside of the United States, among African states, to start to nip this in the bud if they could, but they would need certain kinds of technical assistance and equipment to do so. But that did not happen, and we still don't know why, except that your article suggests that big money had a role to play in it. Now let's get to the major players here in big oil money and the shady characters that have emerged as perhaps a major reason that Hillary Clinton allowed a genocidal terrorist acts to occur on her watch and did nothing about it.
Well, first of all, it's important to point out that former President Bill Clinton of the lucrative speeches he has given overseas, we've seen a lot in the press about that over recent years. The Clintons earned, I think, something multiple millions of dollars even last year alone in giving overseas speeches. Two of his most lucrative overseas speeches were given in Nigeria. He earned $700,000 each in fees, one in 2011 and one in 2012, this exact period of violence that you and I have been talking about. He was hosted at the at both of those speeches by a Nigerian media mogul named Nduka Obagbena. And Obagbena, you know, has just really a long list of shady dealings, I'll call it, that have brought scrutiny. He was involved in a $2 billion arms scan at the second event where Clinton spoke on his behalf. Obagbena handed out checks to school teachers. Clinton had given a speech about the importance of education. And afterwards, Obagbena handed out these checks. Those checks later bounced. These are the kinds of things we never hear about in the American press, but the Nigerian press was full of outrage over a former American president coming, giving, you know, a cheerleading speech to a room full of school teachers who are being paid very little money, and then having a billionaire hand out paychecks that are no good. These are the kinds of things the Clintons have been associated with. And then, you know, the other probably really prominent donor from Nigeria who's been in the news also quite a bit is a real estate developer named Gilbert Chagouri. Gilbert Chagouri has donated between $1 million and $5 million to the Clinton Foundation. And in 2009, he pledged $1 billion, that's billion with a B, to the Clinton Global Initiative, an affiliate of the Clinton Foundation. There's no record or real way. This is something I know you've talked about with Charles Ortel, some of the problems with the accounting of the Clinton Foundation. As we looked into the records on this $1 billion pledge, there's no way of really accounting if that pledge was actually made and what the pledge was actually made for. But it was noted at the time, and what you can assume from that is that everybody was trying to get noticed. The Clintons were trying to get noticed for hooking up with someone like Gilbert Chigori, and Chigori was trying to get noticed for being so such a tight player with a couple as powerful as Bill and Hillary Clinton. So what did they get out of it? We don't really know, but we have to look at this time period and also at a Secretary of State who at the same time is pushing back against the head of the leading commander of U.S. military forces in Africa, the head of AFRICOM, principal officials with the CIA, lawmakers, as you pointed out, and others, and making policy on Nigeria.
But in the meantime, corporations did very well with the Clintons, and specifically the Clinton Foundation and Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. And a lot of money seems to have been exchanged either to the foundation or from the U.S., from the U.S. government via Hillary Clinton to these corporations. For example, Procter & Gamble in Nigeria won a State Department award of some between $1 and $5 million given to the Clinton Foundation in 2011. Nestle donated to the Clinton Foundation. What does this suggest about a possible conflict of interest of a Secretary of State personally intervening in these business matters at a time when Boko Haram is conducting a campaign of terror, slaughtering people by the thousands, millions of people being displaced, all hell is breaking loose in Nigeria, and Hillary Clinton is not the least bit concerned about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're talking large sums of money, and you have to assume that Procter & Gamble and Nestle, some of these Nigerian businessmen we've been talking about, they're not going to give money to the Clinton Foundation or to the Clinton presidential campaign. We haven't even gotten into some of those donations. They're not going to give money if they don't expect something in return. Why would you give a donation in the millions or $1 billion unless you expect something in return for it? And it's fair to assume that what they assumed they would be getting was Hillary Clinton's ear, Hillary and Bill Clinton's access to power at all levels, and how they were then using those levers is, I think, a fair question. I think something that we have to be asking our public officials more and more. You know, we've talked so much about the terrorism and corruption that we see just exploding in North Africa and in the Middle East. And we often look at it in ideological terms. We try to sort of psychoanalyze what's going on. But what if it's just about the money? And what if our own public officials are selling us out and making us less secure because they're benefiting somehow? I think these are questions that we need to be asking more. And it's going to be very difficult to get to the bottom of it, but it seems like it's worthwhile to at least be exploring it.
Where Boko Haram started, in that corner of Nigeria, the campaign literally started out as a campaign directed against Christians. However, it also was an oil country. So Boko Haram, in effect, was conducting a two-pronged war to wipe out the Christians, and also to, it seems, to protect the interests of big oil. Did you get any kind of indication in your investigation of an overlapping interest here that somebody or some people or some companies or corporations in Nigeria felt it feasible to look the other way, to disregard Boko Haram, or even encourage the slaughter, because in effect, as long as their interests were protected and the interests were about oil and ownership of oil and oil money, who emerges in the scenario as key players in this kind of arrangement, if you will?
Mm-hmm. Well, interestingly enough, one of the key players in all these things that you've touched on, and someone who really bears a lot more scrutiny, is Kasi Lawal. Kasi Lawal has headed up arguably the richest oil firm based out of Houston, called KMEC, and now it's been renamed Aaron Energy. He has for years been tight with the Clintons. He accompanied Bill Clinton on his first trip to Africa. He's been a major donor to the Clinton campaigns, was actually a bundler for Hillary Clinton in 2008. What that means is he actually went to people and campaigned on her behalf and did fundraising on her behalf, raising $100,000 for that purpose, and hosted a fundraiser for her in his Houston home. Has given to the both the Clinton inaugural efforts and President Obama's 2009 inaugural committee. We have somebody here who's extremely wealthy and sitting on top of a really successful oil exploration and energy consortium at a time when companies like this are showing, you know, negative revenue as we've seen oil prices falling. Kasi Lawal's KMEC and now Aaron Energy Company has been posting record profits. Part of it seems to be coming from an offshore license that he has to extract oil on the coast of Nigeria. But keep in mind that the Nigerian oil industry has just been ravaged with corruption. Nigeria was a military dictatorship. Lawal and even the current president, Buhari, deeply tied into past rulers there who ran the country as a military dictatorship where kickbacks and oil profits were the norm. And what we see happening now is this very promising oil basin is opening up that is right in the precise area where Boko Haram is operating, the Lake Chad Basin that stretches from Chad across Niger and into northeastern Nigeria, has suddenly become pretty decent source of oil on the Chad side. And as we started looking into it, we could find very little evidence of oil extraction or oil exploration on the Nigeria side. But what apparently is happening, this terror activity has the effect of sort of shutting down a region, clearing off villages, and allowing groups like Boko Haram to actually, through illicit trade arrangements, extract oil. They're using 3D drilling to extract oil onto the Chad side and thereby making it sort of off the table oil that can be sold for any price on any market. This can be very lucrative for those who are involved in it, but it can be very harmful for those whose land is part of that area and who can fall victim to it. All these things are going on again at the same time that we see, the U.S. under the Clinton State Department just simply not taking normal steps to combat a terrorist group like Boko Haram.
Now, Kasi Lawal, the businessman that you referred to, is in fact living in the United States. He's a very wealthy Nigerian. He lives in Texas, and he happens to be a billionaire, that's with a B, and mm-hmm. a very close associate of the Clintons. But you had mentioned before that there's a list. Is he on the list of characters who have a sleazy past and who should come under close scrutiny by the United States?
Well, you would think so. In the past, Lawal has faced charges in South Africa over an illegal oil scheme. charges of illegally pumping and exporting 10 million barrels of oil in Nigeria. At one point, he was under indictment in Nigeria. Those charges mysteriously disappeared. In 2011, a year that keeps coming up in our conversation here, Lawal arranged with several others a plot to purchase 4 tons of gold from a rebel warlord in the Democratic Republic of Congo. This was a really bad guy who was on a lot of lists he was on a U.S. sanctions list at that time, which meant that doing any business with him could land someone in prison for up to 20 years. And yet, Lawal, he actually was part of leasing a plane that was going to pick up these 4 tons of gold and was going to take them who knows where, because it was actually confiscated at the border. Lawal contacts the State Department. We don't know of any direct contact with Secretary of State Clinton, but it's fair to assume she had been in his home. He had done fundraisers for her. It's fair to assume he might be able to pick up the phone and call Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and authorities in Congo released the plane and dropped the charges, and he never faced charges in the United States. This is somebody who's doing business with bad people all over Africa, and yet he remains a commissioner on the Port Authority of Houston. He remains a very top loyalist with the Democratic Party, and he continues to be apparently raking in money from offshore oil licenses in Nigeria, as well as other things that we don't know about.
We're talking with Mindy Bells, senior editor of World Magazine, who has written a really insightful article in World Magazine about the troubling ties to Nigerian big money, the role of the Clinton Foundation and former President Bill Clinton, and their connections to Nigeria, as well as the highly suspicious, I should say, the highly suspicious inaction of Hillary Clinton in failing to designate Boko Haram a terrorist organization when she was Secretary of State. Mindy, you and your cohort, JC, Derek, have done a two-part series, and Derek's part of the series talks about the State Department not just dragging its feet about Boko Haram, but that some of what you just introduced, which is that you find a lot of high-level, big-money Nigerians funding the Clinton election campaign and factoring very strategically, if you will, as some of the leading Africans funding and footing the bill. Who are some of these people, and what is their connection to the election campaign of Hillary Clinton?
Well, Cassie Lawal would be one of those who is prominent, who we just touched on, who has continued to be involved in election efforts by Hillary Clinton. A number of others, we mentioned Gilbert Taghouri, and then we also see a number of these types who have figured into. One of the others that we touched on was the Tinubu family. Bola Tinubu has operated a number of controversial projects and been a subject of a lot of corruption inquiries in Nigeria. He has been a close friend of Bill Clinton's, and has been involved in a number of projects related to some of the things that we've been talking about. His nephew runs one of the largest private oil and gas companies in Nigeria, known as Owando. So all of these, You know, and his nephew is another controversial Clinton donor. So all of these, again, as I go back to what we said at the beginning, it's just striking that if the Clintons are going to be taking millions of dollars from anyone overseas, which is itself controversial, and we have a number of laws in place that limit and make that very difficult to do, because we know that our national security can be compromised if foreign operatives have undue influence over our public officials. So why is it that when it comes to Nigeria, the people that the Clintons seem to be most tightly connected to are people who are only tied to controversy? The Chiguri money, the Tinubu money, the Lawal money, all of it seems to come with just a really murky and controversial history of business dealings in Nigeria.
John Kerry responded very differently. How did he respond to the entreaty to the State Department, John Kerry being the successor of Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State? How did he respond to the entreaty regarding Boko Haram?
Well, Kerry came in, Kerry was sworn in on February 1, 2013 as Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's successor. And by the end of that month, he had designated Nigeria a foreign terrorist organization. So very quickly, you know, something that had seemed impossible under Clinton became possible with John Kerry. Interestingly enough, you know, we have done a lot of poking around, I think it's really important, Utrecht, to say how difficult it has been to get answers. We've been working on this story for years. Four, maybe almost 5 years ago, we filed Freedom of Information Act requests. That would be 4 years ago, with the State Department, asking for information related to Vernice Guthrie and the presence of Americans in the UN compound, which we talked about at the beginning, asking about some of these other some other connections, and just wanting to learn more about the state of, you know, American security in Nigeria. We didn't get anything really from the State Department until earlier this year. And what we got was by that time we had already confirmed the presence of an American in the UN compound, for instance. The State Department never sent us any documents indicating. The information that we received was so incomplete. It just leaves a lot to be, I think, to question, because clearly in the meantime, we've learned so much about controversy over Hillary Clinton's email server, emails that have gone missing. Presumably, it could be some of these emails related to what was happening in Nigeria, related to who might have been contacting her as the discussions were ongoing about designating Boko Haram a terrorist organization. We just simply don't know. And even after we filed four separate Freedom of Information Act requests, none of them have satisfactorily addressed the things that we asked for. In one case, we received an envelope from the State Department that was empty when we opened it. And so I think, I mean, that presumably was just an office error, but it's kind of emblematic of, I think, State Department under Hillary Clinton, and now Hillary Clinton as a presidential candidate, who just is very dismissive about all of these kinds of very legitimate questions. Her response tends to be, it's time to move on. And yet huge questions remain unanswered as a result. And so when you look at how John Kerry quickly changed course and did designate Boko Haram a terrorist organization, that begs even more questions about why Hillary Clinton refused to do so, because nothing on the ground had changed in that time. Nothing had changed about Boko Haram. Nothing had changed really about Nigeria. Only thing that had changed was who was Secretary of State. And, you know, what I was going to add also is that what's really been puzzling and just strange to us about this whole era of U.S. foreign policy, as we begin digging into this, very little has been done. John Kerry, yes, made the foreign terrorist organization designation, but very little has been done on the U.S. side to aid Nigeria in their fight against Boko Haram to date.
And yet, Boko Haram remains one of the most lethal terrorist groups that has emerged in recent history. And the level of casualties is staggering. And one can't help, I just can't help but raise a question here, the racial question. What other than that could have accounted for the fact that the U.S. seemed to be so, and Hillary Clinton seemed to be so dismissive of what the world recognizes as a catastrophe?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what's happened by not taking serious steps to, as we like to say, nip these groups in the bud before they actually gain territory, before they acquire sophisticated weapons, this is what some of our U.S. anti-terrorism laws are designed to do. They're designed to choke these groups at the beginning, keep them from becoming rich and keep them from becoming expansive. And yet we've watched Islamic State do just that, or ISIS or ISIL, and we've watched Boko Haram do it. And keep in mind, over this period of time that we're talking about, while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, Boko Haram actually formally linked up with ISIS, declared themselves part of the ISIS caliphate for Africa, and began crossing borders and launching attacks in Cameroon and Niger, displacing people all throughout that region. And we've done very little to stop it. And as they grow and become more deadly, it becomes much more difficult to do things to stop it.
The irony of all of this is that Boko Haram and Hillary Clinton have something in common, and that is the interest in big oil in Nigeria. Big oil and big oil money coming out of Nigeria, that they both are stabilizing their incomes, if you will, even at the expense of human lives. You have Boko Haram attacking Christians, chiefly, but also concentrating on the oil-rich part of Nigeria. And one could only assume that part of their mission, like ISIS, is to carry out the orders of somebody who has big sway there in the oil world to stabilize that. You know, you can kill as many people as you want, but spare the oil fields because that's real money. And we can come to terms with that. And for the Clintons, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, and the Clinton Foundation, so many people, whether they're crooks or not, and most of them are, as you've been discussing, who have been affiliated in the big oil business in Nigeria, as long as they keep the money flowing, and we still don't know how much money has been flowing, it is ironic that both Hillary Clinton, or the Clintons, and the Clinton Foundation, and Boko Haram have something in common.
Right. Yeah, I mean, potential oil fields are what we're talking about in the area under Boko Haram's direct control. But, you know, we saw this happen in Sudan, if you'll remember. And that's one of the things that was sort of a tipping moment for us was looking back. I was reporting from the Sudan civil war, the north fighting southern Sudan, going back into the 1990s. And in the late 1990s, you started seeing this scorched earth policy where the Sudanese government and its militias were coming into South Sudan and just attacking these villages viciously. I saw the villages torched. I interviewed people who'd been made homeless and chased by all this activity. And what we saw happen over time is we realized that what was happening was not just simply a war of the Islamic government in Khartoum against the largely Christian population in southern Sudan. This was an effort to clear territory and make way for big oil to come in. And now we know that this this basin, and it's actually, you know, the geological features are similar to what we're seeing in northern Nigeria. This basin in southern Sudan became this lucrative bought over oil market and clearing the area of people who were largely disenfranchised anyway was one way of simply getting at the oil earlier and sooner. As someone told us during our investigation, it's the cheap man's weapons of mass destruction.
Charles Ortel has been documenting the Clinton Foundation's reports, or lack thereof, more accurately, with regard to money it received and how much money it actually has and where the money went. In your reports, have you been able to ascertain to any degree, any accurate degree, just how much money specifically came from the aggregate oil business and other big corporate, international corporate businesses located in Nigeria flowing into the Clinton Foundation, whether for, quote, speeches, unquote, or other things? Have you been able to track that kind of money?
No, I mean, what we know that's been reported exceeds multi-millions of dollars, and we know we've got this $1 billion contribution allegedly made by Nigerian Gilbert Chagori. Whether it was actually made or not, we don't even know. And I think, you know, Charles is much more the expert on this, but one of the problems has been Hillary Clinton, when President Obama picked her to be his Secretary of State, there was a lot of controversy about her ties to the Clinton Foundation. There was an agreement that was reached with the White House that she would disclose all foreign donations. But then it's just been a steady stream of it becoming clear that the Clinton Foundation is not disclosing all of its donations from foreign sources. And also, as Charles has pointed out, not really accurately accounting for them. In other words, we don't know what that money was for. We don't know what it did besides buy favor and influence. In so many of these cases that, you know, $1 billion provided to, or not a billion, but let's say millions of dollars provided for, say, HIV prevention. Well, it's not really traceable to any particular projects in Africa and particular places. This is sort of an amazing, it's really amazing to me because Hillary Clinton also sits, as Secretary of State, she sat atop the U.S. Agency for International Development, which is the organization through which we fund all kinds of relief and development projects all over the world. So she's sitting on top of this agency that that has to do with all kinds of U.S. global engagement, and yet her own Clinton Foundation is not playing by just the very basic rules of accounting and accountability.
Nor is Hillary Clinton apparently playing by the administration's rules either. One would imagine, as Secretary of State, you would pretty much reflect the thinking of the boss. The president at that time had gone to Africa, and he had visited. We talked about it. You know, he was extremely patronizing and downright offensive in some cases, the way he approached African leaders, presuming to lecture them about honesty and corruption and so forth and what they needed to do. But at the same time, he clearly indicated an interest in tightening up the ties between the United States and Africa and looking to Africa, although late, after the Chinese and after India and other countries had gotten there, he finally realized that there was money to be made in Africa, and he at least made the attempt to forge some kind of diplomatic ties. He recently, I think it was last year, had this exchange for African businesses and so forth to come to Washington, D.C. So he has indicated, as President of the United States, a different attitude or something of the burgeoning of a different attitude toward Africa. And here you have his Secretary of State literally standing in the way of one of the biggest score points that he could have had, which was basically saying, look, Boko Haram is emerging. We have to pay attention to it. And we are assisting the Nigerian government at their request. We are assisting them in trying to contain this terror campaign. But she didn't do that. So I'm asking, just from your observations, is this a reflection of how Hillary Clinton operates, that it is really not Barack Obama's foreign policy objectives that are being fulfilled, that she seems to have had the option to fly solo as Secretary of State and do what she wanted to do?
Right. Well, and clearly, I think you have to kind of tie things together. Clearly, if we look at what's happened with the Benghazi situation, where I would say, you know, you could argue that the Republicans have been on a witch hunt. I think the Republicans have had some legitimate questions, and that the reason this thing has gone on is because the administration, both State Department and White House, have been unwilling to answer even basic questions. And as more material comes out, we just get more and more troubled. The same thing has happened with what you're talking about, with some of President Obama's initiatives in Africa. And certainly, if you look at the email situation, where we have just found increasing numbers of missing emails and classified emails that were being handled in an unclassified way, it suggests that Hillary Clinton was above the standards that we hold our public officials to.
What's the continuing interest after these articles that you and Derek have written?
Well, I believe we, you know, we raised a lot of questions, and we certainly had a lot of questions that we didn't find the full answers that we hoped for. And so we want to keep looking down some of these trails. We still have a pending Freedom of Information Act request in with the State Department. We're hoping that we'll receive more information from them. We have, in the course of doing interviews and talking with people on Capitol Hill, there's been interest in holding hearings to look at more deeply at U.S. policy toward Nigeria. I think we really need to recognize, you know, you hinted at some of, you know, racial overtones. And I think it's fair to ask, when we see how much attention is focused on attacks in Brussels and Paris and things like that, why have we not been hearing in our media? I'll take responsibility there. And from our public officials more about this threat in Africa, which threatens Africans, first of all. But then we know that this kind of terrorist activity has a way of spinning out of its own orbit and really causing a lot of chaos. Why aren't we looking more at what Boko Haram has done? I'm just so deeply troubled by the situation with these Chibok girls. You know, 300 of them kidnapped. 57, I believe, is the accurate number of those who have been rescued. But here's the reality on that. All of them escaped. Not one of them was actually rescued by Nigerian or other military. So you have schoolgirls, these vulnerable schoolgirls, captured from their dorm beds in the middle of the night. We've had credible reports about the area in which the group Boko Haram fighters holding them, where they are located. And in 2+ years' time, we have not mounted any kind of, we, the international community, the Nigerian military, with support from Western military, in any kind of configuration. We have been so overwhelmed by this tragedy, and yet we've done nothing about it. I just find it, as a mother of three daughters, and I find it just awful what those parents have gone through, and to think that the military and our international community, we could be very good. You know, Michelle Obama held up this hashtag, Bring Back Our Girls. all this interest in freeing these young women, and we know they've just been brutalized in the time that they've been held. And we have not rescued, we the international community have not rescued one of them. We have waited for them to come up with the courage and the resources on their own to escape this brutal kidnapping. I think it's just horrible.
And this began under Hillary Clinton's watch, where, you know, you have a person who professes to be so sympathetic to the plight of women and girls, and Michelle Obama as well, to the plight of women and girls, and this is what we get. So politics is very interesting. But I want to thank you so much, Mindy, for being with us today. Mindy Bells, senior editor of World Magazine. Could you tell us how people can access your article and that this the other part of your article, the complimentary part written by J.C. Derrick?
We have two articles that are up on our website. It's at worldmag.com. And the first one, which was published about a month ago, called Troubling Ties. And the second one, published just within the last couple of weeks, called Fatal Connections, both dealing with Bill, Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, and their ties to Nigeria and a lack of terror fighting in that area.
I just want to ask you one final question. Is it surprising to you that this is not a major story in mainstream media?
You know, I confess looking at what Charles Wortel has done, looking at what we've done, and we have, I really appreciate you having us on to talk about it. We have had some interest, but I confess to actually looking in the news media, doing a few Google News searches here and there, thinking that this is enough of a big target that we won't be the only, we're small magazine, that we would not be the only ones diving into this. And you know, major media, no one has been involved. And it's interesting because major media was following it back in the 2011-2012 time period, but they've lost interest and they've moved on. And that's a shame for Nigerians, for the Chibok girls, and for others who will be victims of Boko Haram.
Thanks so much for being with us today and enlightening us about the Clinton connection to Nigeria. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about this program. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.